in. I think this was in 1912. Fred McNutt, Burt Perkins, Ben Canine, and mention a few were on that team. The school was maintained until the consolidation as a complete 12-year high school. A new gymnasium was built in around 1936 or 7, and completed about that time. The principals of the school, who I can remember, are J.W. Records and
R-E-C-O-R-D-S.
Right. And there was a H.A. Kessler.
K-E-S-S-L-E-R.
Right. Professor William White. Cunningham. Few that I can remember.
Do you have any fond or unusual recollections of any of the people that taught you down there at Lathan?
Yes, I have many recollections of the teachers that taught me. An Aunt Jenny Burford.
B-U-R-F-O-R-D.
Right, taught in the Wayland School. She taught long enough that she taught my father, and also taught me in the second grade. When I moved up to the fourth grade, Mrs. Milligan taught me, and she was a 30-year teacher. Then, at that time, there was a Laura Mae Spencer, who taught, as I remember right, 48 years, the sixth grade in Wayland. J.D. Blacker, who was a member of the Wingate State Champion basketball team, was our coach, and he was coach and also teacher there at Wayland for many years. I cannot say just exactly.
Basketball or
basketball and baseball coach.
Uh-huh.
He did not teach or coach football. Football at that time had ceased to be in Wayland due to the fact that during the Depression, the equipment just got to the place where they couldn't use it anymore, and there was absolutely just not enough money to buy new football equipment, so the football team was disbanded and football was never played again in Wayland.
Now you said who was your favorite teacher in all the time that you were in the Wayland School?
My favorite teacher would have had to have been Mr. Bill White, who attempted in about 1930 to explain to 17 juniors in Wayland High School the theory of nuclear power. He knew what he was speaking of, but he certainly didn't get it across to we kids. But he always maintained that there was enough power in a pint of water to create a terrific explosion or drive a battleship considerable ways. Now, he knew a little bit in his own mind of nuclear power at that time. His brother was a professor of physics in Indiana University, and they were very close, and they were very, very intelligent men. Mm-hmm. And he passed away shortly before World War II, or I am positive that he would have been well along in our nuclear,
mm-hmm.
because he knew what he was speaking of,
yeah.
like that many years before.
Let's see, you mentioned a hotel earlier. Sort of a place was that?
The hotel was ran for many years by a lady, Mrs. Margaret Cuppy. And
W-P-P-Y.
Right. And due to the both railroads coming in there, the drummers, or as they were called in those days, or the salesmen, traveling salesmen, made their stops at Waveland, and then worked out of there by livery hack, or of course by passenger train. And the hotel was a very thriving business. In fact, reservations had to be maintained quite some time ahead to get a room there, because there just wasn't enough rooms to go around. There was also a couple or three boarding houses in Waveland where more or less the overflow, but Mrs. Cuppy served meals and was known far and wide for her steaks, and at that time we didn't have the type of steak that we're used today. Steak was round steak with brown gravy and mashed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And the hotel is at the present site now a restaurant. Vance's restaurant is there, but at that time and for many, many years was maintained as a hotel.
How large a building, how large a place was it?
I think it consisted of 10 rooms, and of course the dining room and the
dining room on the first floor. And
the dining room was on the first floor, and all of the rooms were upstairs.
Did they have bathrooms in there, or just one?
I think it was a community bath, one bath.
Martin, tell us something about some of the characters. There must have been some characters down there in Waveland.
Certainly
unusual
there were
people. You got any recollection of them?
Yes. Like all old towns, and there was, of course, Hubert Loudermill's barber shop.
Loudermill,
yes. Louderml.
Uh-huh.
And in this shop there was an old shoeshine chair, but it had ceased to serve its purpose as a shoeshine chair, but is known as the liar's bench. And it was occupied by different renowned prevaricators of the truth most of the time, and I can remember as a young boy I got quite a kick out of going to get a haircut, because you never knew who was going to be occupying that seat, but there was quite a few wild tales told in there. And Waveland truly was also quite a logging center, due to the fact that it's closeness to Sugar Creek, and it was in the area where there was very much virgin timber, and it was quite an honor in those days to have the best logging team of horses, and there were truly many very, very good horsemen, handlers, that could get these logs out of the woods, and there were some tremendous loads of logs hauled into the three sawmills that was in Wayland.
Hmm.
And
was this in your time or before?
Yes, this was in my time.
Mm-hmm.
The white oak and the walnut and the yellow poplar was very prevalent in that area. In fact, just up into the 30s was the last big stands of yellow poplar cut out of that country.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that led to many tales of who had the best team, but mostly it was pretty well conceded that Jim Welch, the friendly Irishman, had the best team. And Jim always had the habit that whenever nobody was around, he always said that he talked to his horses, and they understood profane language a little better than they understood just straight. But he said he always liked to talk to him in public, and he never used that, but he always wanted to remember the talk with it, that he had with him back in the barn. And apparently it must have worked, because Jim's horses adored him, and he adored them, and they certainly did pull for him. And he was one of the renowned characters in that area.
Do you have any gamblers down there?
Oh yes, yes. I was taught to play poker by quite a few professional poker players at the goodly age of 7, and I think I continued all the way through. In fact, if you didn't know the art of stud poker and draw poker by the time you was 12 in Wayland, somebody got you out behind the barn and taught you the game, and it took your matches and your money and your marbles and chalk while you was learning the game.
Did they have a game going on down there?
There was a continuous poker game ran in Wayland from the time that I can remember up to the time I left Wayland. And
when did you leave Wayland?
I left Wayland in 1940, and no one ever bothered it. It was never raided, and it was just a part of the town.
Uh-huh.
And accepted as such.
Yeah. Who ran the poker game?
Well,
it wasn't run by anybody.
I don't know for sure whether we ought to say that or not. Sure.
Oh, shoot, that's it's all the guy's probably long since dead, isn't he?
Yes, everybody's dead that ran the poker games then. And Sam Scott was quite a renowned gambler in those days, and ran a poker game. It probably one of the interesting things of Sam's poker game was a gentleman by the name of Farrell, who played very regularly, and he had a big pit bulldog, one of the only pit bulldogs that I know of.
Well, P-I-T, is it?
That's right. And this dog and him were bosom friends, but I don't think you could say that for anybody else in Wayland. They didn't like that dog. But when Ole Farrell came to play poker, he always pulled up two chairs. And he had one saying, he'd say, "Get up, pup, and sit down and watch Ole raise it." Well, the dog would immediately get in a chair, and he took over the chair. And of course, a chair in a poker game was an income to Sam Scott. And Sam would look at that dog and kind of look at him a little bit and maybe curse him under his breath, and that dog would just growl right back at it. But he didn't get him off of the chair. He stayed there as long as Ole played poker.
Oh, boy.
But there was many characters in Wayland. Helm added to the history of it.
What about, do you have any prominent political figures come out of Wayland at all?
not too many. I really think most of our political figures down there was also Rands. We got about as high as the trustee, and that's about as far as anyone ever got, to my knowledge, out of Waverly in politics. Mr. Evans, who ran the grocery store at one time, served, I think, one or two terms as county commissioner. And that was about the farthest we went. Judge Tom Rice, who lived considerably north of Waverly in the Freedom area, was judge here for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And
were there any doctors down there?
Yes, yes. Waverly was blessed with doctors from a very early time. There was the Dr. Strawns, a father and son combination. There was
S-T-R-A-U-G-H-N.
Right. Kent Strawn was the father, and I'm not sure when he established his practice in Waverly, but it would have been somewhere in the 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was preceded by his son, a Lee Strawn, who took over and continued the medical practice until he moved in and was medical officer for the Ben-Hur life here. And then he was replaced by a Dr. Bell, who later moved to Crawfordsville, and a Dr. Isaacs, who was killed in an automobile accident in and during his practice there. Then they were in turn replaced by Dr. Noblet, who was a long time doctor there, who
N-O-B-L-I-T-T.
N-O-B-L-I-T-T, right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he in turn was replaced by a young doctor, I think Hendricks, or Hedricks. I'm not sure, because he came there about the time I left. And then there has been one doctor there since. I don't remember his name. And then, of course, people went from there to Russellville for quite a long time to Dr.
Richards.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any dentists there in town?
Yes. We were probably blessed with the first dentist that was probably a rural dentist in Dr. Harbison, and I think he established his dentistry there in 1880 or somewhere nearabouts, and continued until he passed away at the age of 90. He was still active in the practice of dentistry.
Did you really go to him as a dentist?
Yes. He done my first filling and pulled two of my baby teeth. And he was odd in the fact that he was quite a manufacturer of false teeth. And he went about it the old way. In fact, it was very amusing to see Doc meet a patient in his going up and down the street or something. If a patient told Doc that his false teeth hurt him, Doc immediately reached in his mouth, took his false teeth out, and got his pocket knife, scratched a chunk out of his false teeth, and put them back in his mouth, and says, "How's that feel?" Many times it felt lots better.
Now, Doc Harbison, what kind of equipment? Did he have one of those pedal type things, or did he have...
You betcha. All of his power was foot power. As far as the drill goes, the faster you pump, the more it hum and the hotter it got.
Yeah.
And
did he pump that himself, or did he have someone...
Yes, he pumped it himself. He pumped it himself, and the wooden chair, I don't remember whatever became of it. I think, if I'm not mistaken, It is still in the antique store there, Vivian's Antique Store today.
Uh-huh.
It's preserved there. And it was more like an old barber chair, an old wooden barber chair.
Mm-hmm.
But he got result.
Mm-hmm. What about, there was never a lawyer in Waveland, was there?
No, not to my knowledge. No. No, there was never a lawyer practice there.
What about a justice of the peace? Did you have
yes, a justice of the peace. I think started at the time the justice of peace was organized, a J.E. Rosenbaum.
Mm-hmm.
Was appointed justice of the peace, and that passed down through until I think Kenneth Milligan was the.
When would that have been?
That would have been probably in around 1940.
Mm-hmm.
As I remember right, he was the last justice of peace.
Now, who were some of the prominent farmers around Waveland?
Well, of course, the Emmerts, L.B. Emmert was a very prominent farmer. The Mosiers were prominent farmers. The Durhams, many of the Durhams family was all very prominent farmers. The Deers owned farms, but mostly rented their farms out, and the Fulwiders were prominent farmers of that time. The Evanses were very prominent farm families. Probably the model farm of that community belonged to Claude Leidig. It was situated east of Browns Valley. And,
how do you spell that?
L-Y-D-I-C-K. He purchased the first combine that was ever used in central Indiana. My father sold it to him in, approximately 1925. I remember very well that the whole community, and it was a very big gathering, was invited in, and it was quite a thing because we threshed wheat in the morning with the combine, and then a sack of the wheat was rushed to Waynetown to Bolt Milling Company. They ground it into flour, and it was rushed back, and biscuits were baked with that wheat for noon lunch.
My goodness.
And that was quite a deal. I can remember that. I can also remember that day very much when a prominent school principal of today and I got tired of seeing the combine run, and we went across the road to Sam Tom Patton's father, and just for a little amusement, we decided that we'd saddle up one of Joe Patton's heifer calves. And Joe Patton was quite a horseman in that day, and he had a very high-priced saddle, and that was the saddle that we picked out to put on the heifer calf. Well, after we got the saddle on her, why, we couldn't figure out who was going to try to ride her, and it fell my lot, and I can remember at least two jumps that I was on her after she left the barn and she headed north towards Crawfordsville, and the saddle was underneath her belly, and every jump she took, there was a big piece of leather went out of that new saddle.
Oh my.
I consequently, when Joe Patton found out, he took care of Sam Tom, and my dad took care of me, and I took my meals standing up for some time after that.
Oh, boy.
But that was the starting of the combine at Claude Leidig's wheat field, and it established a new way of cutting grain and started the downfall of the old steam separators, which was very prevalent in those
Norm,
days.
What'd you do for entertainment in a way of one besides the poker game?
There was lots of entertainment. In fact, back then you made your own entertainment as a young man. I think at the time any young man reached the age of 10, he was considered at that time very capable of handling a .22 rifle. And of course there was hunting, all kinds of hunting, and practically every boy hunted. In the winter time he trapped muskrats, skunks, coons, and made his spending money, and it was without question that practically every young man had his own trap line, and he respected the rights of the others. Of course, in the summertime, we fished on Sugar Creek and Little Raccoon, and we had our own bicycles. They was our wheels of that time, mostly used bicycles. Very few people had new bicycles. We generally always was able to resurrect an old one we found someplace, and that served the purpose. All of the young men had farm jobs. At that time, the going pay was 10 cents an hour for hoeing corn, and you generally worked 10 hours a day and carried your dinner and got a dollar, and that was considered a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. If you only worked 5 hours, you only got 50 cents, too.
Mm-hmm.
Later in the years, we went to the river bottoms, most of the younger men, and ran cultivators there during the cultivating season on corn, and because the large acreage there,